So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, chapter number 12, the Srimad Bhagavatam summarized. Text number 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Suta Uvacha.
Suta Uvacha.
Namaha.
Namaha.
Dharmaya.
Dharmaya.
Mahate.
Mahate.
Namaha.
Namaha.
Krishnaya.
Krishnaya.
Vedase.
Vedase.
Ramanevyaha. Suta Uvacha.
Suta Uvacha.
Suta Goswami said.
Suta Goswami said.
Namaha.
Namaha.
Obeisances.
Obeisances.
Dharmaya.
Dharmaya.
To the principle of religion.
To the principle of religion.
Mahate.
Mahate.
Greatest.
Greatest.
Namaha.
Namaha.
Obeisances.
Obeisances.
Krishnaya.
Krishnaya.
To Lord Krishna.
To Lord Krishna.
Vedase.
Vedase.
The Creator.
The Creator.
Ramanevya.
Ramanevya.
To the Brahmanas.
To the Brahmanas.
Namaskritya.
Namaskritya.
Offering my obeisances.
Offering my obeisances.
Dharma.
Dharma.
The principles of religion.
Vakshye,
I shall speak.
I shall speak.
Sanatanam.
Sanatanam.
Eternal. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Suta Goswami said, offering my obeisances to the supreme religious principle, devotional service, to Lord Krishna, the supreme creator, and to all the Brahmins, I shall now describe the eternal principles of religion. In this 12th chapter of the 12th canto, Suta Goswami will summarize all the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning from the first canto. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Satam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Rupa Krishna Vadam Sahagana Vadita Shivam Vitam Shcha. This is a very good lesson for us. How Suta Goswami is preparing himself to describe the principle of religion. In the Sanskrit, there is namaha, namaha, namaskritya. Three times, offering obeisances. In one verse, he's three times offering obeisances. And after offering obeisances three times, first to devotional service itself, which is worshipable. Devotional service is itself worshipable. The Lord Krishna, he offers obeisances, and then to all the Brahmins, he offers his obeisances. So this is what he's doing before he describes the principles of religion. So the point is, unless you offer obeisances, a lot, like he's doing here. Not only to one Brahmin, to all the Brahmins he's offering his obeisances. Unless you offer obeisances, a lot of obeisances, you're not qualified to describe the eternal principles of religion. In other words, this is not the subject matter for intellectuals, for scholars. This is the subject matter for those who offer obeisances. Unless one humbles himself before Krishna, before the process of devotional service, and the learned Brahmanas, the Vaishnavas, There's no question of realizing this philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Ye yatamam prapadyante tangs tataiva bhajanyaham. Inasmuch as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So how do we surrender to Krishna? What's one of the items of surrendering? Obeisances, obeisances, obeisances. Nowadays, the mood is, I don't bow down to anybody. You see? But that mood does not allow one to actually enter into the understandings of this sublime knowledge. Unless you humble yourself, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us, to nada pisunichena, to rora pisahishena, amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. One should consider himself lower than the straw in the street. You should be more tolerant than a tree. He should be ready to offer all respect to others without expecting any respect for himself. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. And we can add that in such a state of mind only can one actually understand the Vedic wisdom. It's not, this understanding is not the privilege of those who are mental speculators, the jnanis. This knowledge is privileged to those who actually develop the mood of surrender. Love for the Supreme Lord. Love for the process of Krishna consciousness. Love for the Ramanas, the Vaishnavas. This is a very good example of this. One time in Lord Chaitanya was touring South India. He came to Rangachakra. And there was some Gramyagata going around. There was one Brahmin there who would sit in the temple. He was completely illiterate. But this Brahmin, he would sit there in the Bhagavad Gita and look at the pages, you see. You know, he's completely illiterate. So everybody would make fun, yeah, that Brahmin, he can't read, and he's, what is this nonsense? He's sitting there turning to the pages of the Bhagavad Gita, trying to read the Bhagavad Gita. He can't even read one word of it, but he's turning the pages. What is this nonsense? Everybody was laughing, making fun of this Brahmin. So Lord Chaitanya, he heard all this talk going on. He said, let me see this Brahmin. So he approached the Brahmin. Now the Brahmin was used to being made fun of. But when Lord Chaitanya approached him, he could see, this person has not come to criticize me. There's something different about this person. He's not come to criticize me. So anyway, Lord Chaitanya said, Brahman, I have heard that you are illiterate, but yet you are reading Bhagavad Gita. How is that, Brahmana? He said, what can I do? Yes, I'm illiterate, but what can I do? My Guru Maharaj has ordered me every day, you must read 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. What can I do? I'm simply turning these pages. So, Lord Chaitanya said to Brahman, I see you're not only looking over the script there and the manuscript, you're not only looking over the pages, but you're crying also. How is it you're crying? He said, yes, there's one painting here that goes with the manuscript. It shows Krishna driving the chariot of Arjuna. And when I see how Krishna is so kind that he's driving the chariot of his devotee, I cry. Lord Chaitanya embraced him and said, Brahman, you are the real scholar of Bhagavad Gita. So it is that softness of the heart, actually, that makes one a qualified scholar of the Vedic wisdom. That faith. You see how much faith he had in the words of his spiritual master? Even though he is illiterate, still, my Guru Maharaj has ordered me, every day I must read 18 chapters, so I must do. See, that is complete faith in the order of the spiritual master. Yasya deve para bhaktir tata deve tata guru tasyaite kachita hirata prakashante mahatmanaha. only unto those great souls who have unflinching faith in the instructions of the spiritual master and the instructions of Krishna are the imports of Vedic knowledge revealed. You don't have to be a great scholar. You just have to have faith in the words of your spiritual master and the words of Krishna. If you have that faith, then Krishna will reveal everything to you. You'll understand in full the Vedic wisdom. So we see Siddha Goswami so nicely exemplifying this principle. So nicely. Obeisances, obeisances, obeisances. That is the duty, actually. Prabhupada explains in his books the duty. When you see a Vaishnava, your duty is to offer obeisances. That's when the duty when you see a Vaishnava. But what do we tend to do? Oh, we want to find fault. That fault-finding mood is our worst enemy. We meant to worship the Vaishnava. Anande Balohadi Baja Vrindavan Sri Guru Vaishnava Pade Marjayaman. What is Narottam saying? He's saying one should ecstatically chant Hare Krishna, Anande Bolo Hari Vaja Vrindavan, and worship the holy Vrindavan Dham. And one should always meditate upon the lotus feet of Guru and Vaishnava. So how much do you worship the Vaishnava within your heart? You see? How much do you offer your obeisances to the Vaishnava Brahmanas? What is your mood for the devotees? Do you worship the devotees within your heart? Because that's how you're going to realize the Vedic wisdom. That's how you realize the Vedic wisdom. This is confirmed in the Adi Purana. Ye me bhakta jana paratha, na me bhakta stache janaha, mad bhakchananche ye bhaktas, te me bhakta mata mata. Krishna tells Arjuna, he says, my dear son Aprita, the one who is my devotee, na me bhaktas. He's not my devotee. But the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So how much are you a devotee of the devotee? How much do you worship the Vaishnava? That is how much you realize the import of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Dasa, dasa, nudasa is not simply a slogan. It is the secret of success in spiritual life. So, let us take that mood of humbly serving the Vaishnavas. That will be our success in Krishna consciousness. If we cannot take that mood, we may be considered devotees, but not very high standard devotees. If we cannot take that mood of serving Vaishnavas, then we are called Kanishta Adhikari, materialistic devotees. We don't know how to properly offer our obeisances to the Vaishnavas, how to properly worship the Vaishnavas. We are called Kanishta Adhikari, materialistic devotee. Materialistic devotee means he can fall down at any time because he's still flirting with the material energy. He's got one foot in the boat of Krishna consciousness and one foot in the boat of Maya. He's split between the material and spiritual energy. So that position, Kanishta Adhikari, is not a very secure position. One who doesn't know how to properly respect and worship the Vaishnavas, he's Kanishta Adhikari. But if one can actually come solidly to the Madhyama Adhikari platform, where you truly respect all the devotees of the Lord, you worship them within your heart. Prabhupada explains in the next devotion, when one comes to that second
class platform, you cannot fall down from Krishna consciousness. You cannot fall down. It's immune to fall down. The Madhyam and the Uttamadikari, they cannot fall down from Krishna consciousness. That means if somebody goes away from our movement, they never even came to the Madhyam platform. They were still to some extent a Kanishta Adhikari. So you want to become solid in Krishna consciousness? Where you cannot fall down, just learn to respect the Vaishnava. If you can truly learn how to love and respect every Vaishnava, you will never fall down from Krishna consciousness. So it is very beneficial. Very, very beneficial. The more you love the Vaishnavas, the more you appreciate the Vaishnavas, the more the qualities of those Vaishnavas are, those saintly qualities of those Vaishnavas are transferred to you. I'll give you an example. Just say, for example, somebody, you know, can play a really good mridanga. I mean, they really can play mridanga. Wow. They play the mridanga, it's like, wow, it's amazing. And you think, well, he must be really puffed up, you know. You're envious, you see, because you can't play like that. So you, instead of learning how to play yourself, you just put him down, you see, in your mind. You may not say anything out loud, but in your mind you're thinking, yeah, he's really puffed up, you see. So what's going to be the result? You will never be a good mridanga player. You'll never be a good mridanga player. Because in your mind you're finding fault with that person who's really expert, you see. But on the other hand, let's say you go, wow, he must really, he's expressing his love for Krishna. I mean, he really must feel some love because he plays so sweetly in the kirtan with so much enthusiasm. In this way, if you're appreciating his mridanga playing, guess what will happen? You'll become a damn good mridanga player yourself, you see. Because you appreciate that devotee. So the point is, the more you appreciate the devotees, the more you inherit their saintly qualities. And the more you denigrate them, the more you become useless. So this very practical thing, the more I can appreciate devotees, then that enhances my spiritual advancement like anything. Just by appreciating devotees, you automatically advance in Krishna consciousness. Just by one thing, appreciating devotees, you automatically advance in Krishna consciousness. Here's one mental trick that helps, because, you know, we have our false ego problems, let's face it, you know, we all do. So how do you get beyond them? Here's a little trick I found that works quite well. Let's say you had some disagreement with a devotee. Every time you just can't seem to get along well with a particular devotee, and you know, you want to see him in a positive way, but your mind tends to think back to some quarrel you had with him or something like that. Just think, how would Prabhupada see this devotee? What would Prabhupada's vision of this devotee be? So in this way, instead of seeing through your own false ego, try to see through the eyes of Srila Prabhupada. How much would Srila Prabhupada appreciate the years and years and years of dedicated service this person has rendered to the Krishna consciousness movement, you see. In this way, just like we have Shastra Chakshus, there's also Prabhupada Chakshus. See through the eyes of scripture. Also, how would Prabhupada see? It's the same thing. How would Prabhupada see this person? Prabhupada is so much appreciative. Any service rendered, even a person became completely, you know, fallen down. It's an example. My wonderful godbrother Madhavisha Prabhu, at one time he was actually the big leader here in Australia, Madhavisha Swami. But then he got carried away with an attraction for Madhavi and gave up some. He went to Hawaii, he grew his hair out like a hippie, and, you know, kind of got out of the loop for a while there, you see. But then in the final days in Vrindavan, when Prabhupada was leaving his body, and he thought I had just His wife, actually his wife had had a baby. He left his wife back because he had a small baby. And he came alone to Vrindavan. And at that time he had long hippie hair. So he thought, how can I see Prabhupada like this? So the Delhi airport got a haircut. And because he had a long hippie hair, he had a very long sikha. And so he came into Prabhupada with a big, huge, long sikha and a shaved head. And Prabhupada said, oh, Madhavisa, you're keeping such a nice sikha. Instead of saying, why have you given up sannyas? You were too much. Why have you fallen down being attracted by a woman? He didn't chastise him for that. He said, oh, you're keeping such a nice sikha, Prabhupada. Appreciate it. Oh, such a nice sikha you have. And then he said, oh, where is your wife? Now that, why have you given up sannyas? No, where is your wife? Why have you not brought your wife with you? You see. And this way, Papa gave all encouragement. You see. So we have to remember this wonderful mood of Srila Prabhupada. In other words, Prabhupada was always trying to inspire everyone in their Krishna consciousness. So you know, that's really the best service you can do for any devotee. Try to relate with that devotee in such a way that you inspire that devotee to become more and more Krishna conscious. That's the best service you can render to a devotee, you see. How can I relate with this devotee in such a way that he becomes more, or she becomes more and more inspired to become Krishna conscious? That's what I've realized as a traveling preacher, that you know, I really, that should be my only purpose, and I make that my only purpose. Not that, well, you know, I want to make some, come here to this temple and make some disciples, you know. No. I'm thinking, what can I do to inspire all the devotees to become more and more Krishna conscious? And I find by doing that, then I automatically also myself become more and more Krishna conscious. So really, that's our only purpose here. This is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, not the International Society for making more and more disciples, you know. Actually, Lord Chaitanya said that I don't meant to make any number of disciples. I have no desire for making disciples. I have no desire for women. I have no desire for money. I don't even desire liberation from the cycle of birth and death. I just want to become more and more inspired in Krishna consciousness. That's all. That's my only desire. I just want devotional service, birth after birth. So if we make that our agenda, wherever we go, you see, that's the spirit of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Simply want to encourage everyone in Krishna consciousness. If that's always our motive, our desire, I simply want to encourage everyone to become more and more and more Krishna conscious, then we'll be living in Vaikuntha. We'll be living with Krishna at every minute. The material energy won't be able to touch us. Such a devotee who is fully absorbed in inspiring everyone in their Krishna consciousness. The material energy gets spiritualized by coming in contact with such a devotee. So we should all try to become such a devotee. Right now we're struggling with our material desires. But has anybody ever become happy by satisfying their material desires? Can you give me one example of anybody in the history of the universe that ever became happy by satisfying their material desires? It's never happened. But still we dream on that I can become happy by satisfying my material desires. It's a foolish dream. Completely foolish, asinine dream. Mudha dream, you see. That I can become happy by satisfying my material desires. It'll never happen. The only way you can become happy is become a pure devotee of Krishna. Why? Because you are a pure devotee. Now you're simply covered by lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. That's all. So all we're really saying is stop trying to be somebody that you're not and just try to become who you really are. You see? Krishna consciousness is not some artificial imposition on your mind that we're trying to brainwash you into becoming a member of our cult. No. We're trying to free you from the brainwashed cult of this material existence. You've been brainwashed. You see? And you're thinking, I am a male. I am a female. We've been brainwashed. I am Indian. I am Australian. I am American. You see? You've been brainwashed. We have to get free from this conditioning. This conditioning will never make us happy. Never. Never. Even Brahmaji, unless he's a devotee, he cannot be happy. Even in that position of being the controller of the entire universe, he cannot be happy unless he's a devotee, like our Brahma is right now. He's happy because he's a devotee, not because he's Brahma. Okay? So don't think, if I can become a big manager, you see, then I'll become happy. Move my way up the ladder and I'll become a temple president or a GBC. I'll become happy if I get a big managerial post. No. Abrahma bhuvana loka punarvartinarjana mam upechirukanteya punarjanmana vijate. Doesn't matter what post you may have, even if you're posted as Brahmanji, GBC chairman of the whole universe, you see. Still, you cannot be happy, you see. Miserable position. Unless you're Krishna conscious. And then in any position, you can be happy. You can be a street sweeper. You can be a doctor, a lawyer. Any position, if you're Krishna conscious. So just try to awaken your Krishna consciousness. That is our request. Just try to awaken your Krishna consciousness. Come out of the stupor of bodily consciousness. Come out of the influence of the three modes of material nature. Just awaken your actual spiritual nature by calling out to Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Without any offense. And what's the first offense? To be disrespectful to devotees. So how do you avoid being disrespectful to devotees? Well, I'm just not going to associate with any devotees then. Go to the mountains. No. That's not how you avoid it. The way to avoid offenses to devotees is always respect the devotees. Always love the devotees. Always worship the devotees. Always honor the devotees, you see. Prabhupada says, Krishna is more pleased when we glorify the devotees than we glorify Him. So we should always be appreciating these wonderful souls whose association we have been blessed with, even though we should feel ourselves to be the lowest dogs, not worthy of such exalted association. But somehow, even though I'm the most degraded scallywag, I've been blessed with the association of these devotees. You see, that should be our mood. Lower than the straw in the street. Well, yeah, you have to feel you're lower than the straw in the street, or that broken beer bottle out there. You know, you're lower than that broken beer bottle in the street. That's how we have to feel. I remember a nice inspiration for me about humility was I was brought to this movement by a very, very wonderful devotee. His name was Vishnu Jana Maharaj. And he had made some big mistake along with three other sannyasis, and they were presenting bogus philosophy at one point after they got sannyas, and Prabhupada had to ban them from all the ISKCON temples and rectify them and reform them, and it was successful. They got the lesson and they straightened out. But Prabhupada had ordered these four sannyasis, they had to split up, they worked together. He said, now you all go out, each and each of you must open 10 temples, and then you can come back and associate with the ISKCON devotees. That was their penance for the offense they had committed of preaching Mayavadi philosophy. so I remember Vishnudhamma, because for me it was a great blessing, because that's how Vishnudhamma Maharaj came to Austin to open. He opened the Houston temple first, and then the second temple was Austin, and that's where I became saved by his kindness and by Prabhupada's mercy. But I remember he took a chance and showed up at the Ratha Yatra festival. He gambled that Prabhupada wouldn't send him away, and you know, he showed up at the Ratha Yatra festival, hoping he'd get the mercy of Prabhupada, and he did. But then there was a meeting that night of all the managers, and in Berkeley, they had a meeting in Berkeley that night, and I heard a tape of the meeting. It's an amazing meeting. But anyway, Prabhupada, this to me was a good example of humility. Prabhupada, he said, Vishnujana Maharaj, how many temples? In other words, have you done 10 yet? Yeah. So he said, and the way Vishnujana Maharaj just spoke one word, but the way he said it, you could visualize he was like underneath the carpet in the room, putting his head up from under the carpet, you know. He said, two. The way he said it, there was so much humility, you know. It really impressed me, you see. He didn't say, yeah, Prabhupada, I opened two temples. No, he said, two. So humbly, he said it. And then Prabhupada said, so you'll have to open another eight. So we have to learn how to, just the way you speak, you see. Our tone of voice actually says a lot. The tone of voice makes it. The voice is a very powerful medium of expression. The way the same words can be said with entirely different meaning just by the mood. Another example of humility was His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj. At that time, he was Giriraj Das. No, he was a sannyasi. That's right, Giriraj Maharaj. I was visiting our Juhu temple, and just a visiting brahmachari from Texas. Rank and file brahmachari. And I was amazed. It was late in the evening. I was in the prasadam room. It was virtually empty. It was, you know, the end of the day. And I was sitting there to take prasadam, and then Giriraj Maharaj walks up to me in the sweetest voice you could ever imagine. I mean, it was unbelievable. He said, is there anything else I can bring for you? I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Such humility. Here I am, just some brahmachari, you know, some rank and file brahmachari from Texas visiting the Juhu temple. Is there anything else I can bring for you? Like I was his spiritual master. I mean, I couldn't believe it. With such humility, you see. So sweet voice. And I said this. Now then I understood why Prabhupada one time had said, Giriraj is Bombay and Bombay is Giriraj. Prabhupada so much glorified him, you see. And his quality was just unbelievable humility. It was really unbelievable. I'd been in the movement for so many years. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever experienced practically. It was the way he said, is there anything else I can bring for you? Wow. So we really have to learn how to express love and kindness to each other, humility and appreciation in all of our dealings with each other. Because this is how we will attract the mercy of Krishna. And this is how we will actually realize what is the true meaning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and how then we will be able to describe, as Sutta Goswami did, how we will be able to accurately, potently, and inspiringly present the eternal principles of religion. So I can ask if there's any questions. Okay.
How do you avoid being an issue with your dealings with the various false humility?
Can you help? What did he say?
How do you avoid false humility?
False humility, yes. A good way to avoid false humility is to remember the one pastime where one disciple wrote Prabhupada. He said, Srila Prabhupada, he signed it, I'm the most fallen. Prabhupada said, you're not the most anything. You're simply insignificant. So yeah, false humility is really just egotism. I'm going to show that I'm, you know, the most humble devotee. Actually, real humility is if you think I'm a puffed up rascal. I'm really, really a puffed up rascal. That's if you say yes, yes. You know, I'm your humble servant. I know. Sometimes I just see on the internet devotees, some conferences, devotees would say, in my humble opinion, that I was thinking it would be more humble to say, in my puffed up opinion. My puffed up opinion. Yeah. In my humble opinion, you are a rascal, Prabhu. the best way to get over, the best way is to find an advanced devotee who is who doesn't hesitate to correct you when you're wrong. It's the best way to give up false humility. Find an advanced devotee who very mercifully points out the faults of those with whom he associates with. That's the best way to get rid of them, you see. I remember in Juhu, when Brahmana, he was giving a class, he said, if somebody finds fault with you, move in with them. find your fault finder, and that's who you need to associate with, those devotees who find fault with you. Because, yeah, if alone, I think, yeah, I'm pretty great, you know. I remember there was one brahmachari, he told me, I couldn't believe it, he said, this is back in Gainesville, back in 73, he said, yeah, they just call me the Paramahamsa Brahmachari. And he was, within a year he was gone. Our Paramahamsa Brahmachari, I don't know, he went back to dancing with Maya Devi again. Paramahamsa Brahmachari. So, we have to really, and there's the old saying, you know, that poet, I think it was Milton, one of a great famous poet, he wrote, pride cometh before the fall. So this pride is a very big problem, you see. The many times I'm asked, you know, how to get free of pride, and I always come back to Lord Chaitanya's instruction. Offer all respect to others without expecting any respect for yourself. That's the key. Be very, very respectful to everyone. I mean, it happens. Sometimes we're very much disrespected. And sometimes it was warranted, and sometimes it may not have been warranted. It may have been, you know, a fault of that person, or, you know, it goes both ways. Sometimes we are very disrespected. So how do you deal with that? You return disrespect with respect. That's how to develop humility. Always be respectful. You see? Always be respectful. To be respectful, that is not false humility. You see. To always be respectful, there's nothing false about that. Of course, that doesn't mean if somebody is giving some bogus instructions, it doesn't mean we obey that instruction. Sometimes that happens. In the old days, in ISKCON, there was one imposter, some Japanese woman, she came to the New York Temple. She said, you know, I'm the heiress to the Toyota fortune. I'm going to inherit the Toyota fortune. And the devotees believed her. They thought, wow, this is great. And we have Ford, now Ambarish, and now we're going to get Toyota also. Devotees was in the temple president. He was a sannyasi, but he was really... Wow, I think I'll make a sacrifice for Prabhupada's mission. I'll give up sannyasa and marry her, you know. That way we can. So he did it. He gave up sannyasa, he married her. She was a complete imposter. She was just a what do they call it? A con artist, yeah. She was a con artist. And she, here she was, the wife of the temple president now. And they were offering eggs to Radha Govinda, or preps with eggs in them. Can you imagine? And devotees didn't dare say anything, because she was like the queen, Maharani, you know. I remember they visited the Miami temple. She had an assistant, a female servant who traveled with her. And while she was hearing the Bhagavatam class, she was getting the chamara. While she was hearing the lecture, she was getting a chamara with. This is the heiress of the Toyota Forge, so-called heiress of the Toyota Forge. It was such an amazing thing. And devotees actually were offering eggs, or preps with eggs on them, to the deities. But we have to do what she says, you know, she's the Maharani. So being humble and respectful doesn't mean if somebody is off the track that you obey them. Understand? You have to use your intelligence. We have to read Prabhupada's books. We have to know what are the standards in Prabhupada's books. These are the law books, Prabhupada's instructions. That's another type of false humility, to obey someone who is off the track. You have to be willing to correct someone also, or not to follow them. We are humble before Prabhupada's teachings. That is our humility. We are fully submitted to the instructions. Even to the point where one can actually give up one's spiritual master if he deviates from the previous acharyas, you see. That is humility. Also. Just like Shukracharya, you see. Vali Maharaj. He gave up his spiritual master because his spiritual master turned out to be bogus. Was that a lack of humility of Vali Maharaj when he gave up his spiritual master? No, he was humble before the truth, the reality. That one should be completely submitted to the Supreme Person. So real humility means to follow the pathway of the great acharyas. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. Doesn't mean to follow someone who is off the track. No. But at the same time, a devotee is respectful to every living being. Those who are properly situated, panditasama darshinaha. He's respectful to a Brahman, he's also respectful to a dog eater, an outcast. Because he sees everyone as part and parcel of the Supreme. Any other questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you were talking about that we must develop love for all the devotees.
Yes.
Now, sometimes it becomes easier to respect the devotees, but it becomes very difficult to love all the devotees.
So how do you expand it from love, from respect to love? Yeah, nice question. It's easy to respect, like, yes, sir. I'll give you respect, but to actually feel loving sentiments for you, that's much more difficult. So how do you go up in the platform of respect to love? And that's the same thing that we're all going through. The sadhana bhakti me is formally respecting and following rules and regulations, but the higher level, raganuga platform, is when actually spontaneous love has arisen. So what you're saying is actually a very relevant question. It applies not only to devotees, but also our relationship with Krishna. So how do you arouse genuine loving feelings for someone? That only comes by purification. We can officially respect. But to actually develop loving feelings, that the key for that is Rupa Goswami's instruction, the nectar of instruction, the six loving exchanges. But the more you engage, you can do those officially. I give you a gift, I receive a gift from you, I distribute prasadam to you, I accept prasadam from you, I reveal my heart to you, I hear you reveal your heart to me. These are the six loving exchanges. I can do it officially, and that's good. And if I continue to do it, then gradually that official respect purifies me. It's like sadhana bhakti purifies me. And then gradually, and it takes a long time, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati says, to go from sadhana bhakti to raganuga bhakti. It takes a long time to do that. It's not some instant thing. because we're covered with lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. So you just have to patiently, soberly, determinedly, enthusiastically continue to engage in these six loving exchanges. And by the purificatory effect of engaging steadily in these six loving exchanges and carefully avoiding offenses, that's the most important thing, then the natural feelings will come. Natural feelings will come. They're already there, Prabhu, but they're buried. They're just covered. Our natural position is to have unlimited love for Krishna, unlimited love for the devotees, unlimited love for all living entities. That's our natural position. But it's covered by all that dirt that's accumulated for millions of lifetimes. So by the purificatory process of chanting and avoiding these offenses, by engaging in associating with Vaishnavas according to Rupa Goswami's instructions, then gradually, those feelings have come. You can only love Krishna to the extent that you love the Vaishnavas. And to the extent that you actually love Krishna, you will naturally love the Vaishnavas. They go hand in hand. So we just have to be patient. Well, right now, I don't feel much love. It's an embarrassing position to be in, but what we can do? We're neophyte devotees, what we can do? Right now, I don't feel so much love. I'm just selfish, thinking about my eating and sleeping. I don't feel that love that I should be feeling. So, but still, alright, I'm sick, I'm diseased. But the good news is, I found the doctor. I found Prabhupada. And those who represent Prabhupada purely. And they're giving me the means of regaining my original, full of love, state of pure Krishna consciousness. So I had to just patiently take the cure. Day by day, chant 16 rounds, follow the principles, rise early. And this way, gradually, the dust will be cleaned off and the natural feelings will come in the heart. Yes?
Maharaj, you said that we should not criticize or find fault with another person.
Yes.
At the same time, on the other hand, you said that we have to associate with the person. So how do we draw a line? How do we understand this?
So, if you're associating with someone who's finding fault with you, but you don't find fault with others, fault finding is this. Actually, there's two kinds of fault finding. One is good, and one is bad. It's the duty of those who are in a position to find fault with their subordinates, the parent. Who doesn't find fault with his child and point out his discrepancies, he's the enemy of his child. The spiritual master is also the enemy of his disciples if he doesn't point out their faults. It's his duty. He doesn't want to be a fault finder, but it's his duty. Sometimes the spiritual master has to correct the devotees, his disciples. So any devotee actually it's a duty of all of us. Every devotee who is the senior devotees have a duty and a responsibility to train up the junior devotees. So anybody who's been around a little while, they have responsibility. They know what the standards are. And they have to train up others who are not following the standard. But it's not in the mood of fault finding. It's the mood of service. In other words, you can find fault in a holier-than-thou attitude, like, I'm great and you're scum. You see? That's the negative type of fault finding. But the positive thing is a mood of helping someone. It's like a doctor. He points out what your disease is. He's not trying to be one up on you and think I'm better than you. No, he wants to serve you and help you. So that kind of fault finding is required. Helping others to overcome their weaknesses and their discrepancies. So that's good. Even if you're not in a position to point out the discrepancies in others, one has to also see the discrepancies. In other words, you have to read Prabhupada's books, you have to know what's in Prabhupada's books, you have to know what the standards are. So if you see someone who's not following the standards, you have to be able to recognize that so you don't follow their bad example. We should know what the actual standards are by carefully reading these books. And then we have to discriminate. Well, this devotee is properly following Prabhupada's books, this devotee is not properly following the books. Now that you're trying to find fault with him, you're trying to protect your own spiritual life. So we have to have the power of discrimination. That's different than a fly-like fault-finding mentality who just wants to pick every devotee to pieces out of envy. And see, this is bad, this is bad. It's a whole different mood. One is benevolent, the other is malevolent. See, the other is well-wishing, the other is not well-wishing mood. So I hope that's clear. There's two types of fault-finding. There's transcendental fault-finding and mundane fault-finding. Yeah. Anything else? Everybody satisfied now? Alright. Good. So now we have some. Our deities here are Radha Damodar. They're a little tiny. If you go real close to the altar and squint your eyes, you might see them there. Small little Radha Krishna deities that travel with us.